Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
And today we are talking not only about something very cool and interesting, but to someone very cool and interesting. And we've alluded to this a few times leading up to this episode. So without any further ado, welcome Peyton Pugmire. Yay! Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Peyton is a past life regression hypnotherapist. He's also a creative spirit, and that's kind of what his whole business revolves around, whether it's doing drama therapy. Is that right?
It's a part of it, yes.
A part of it, and being an actual physical artist and an intuitive and all this other great, amazing, awesome things. And he has a wonderful practice up in Marblehead. So welcome. And thank you. Thank you for being here. And we had the unbelievable honor and privilege to each have individual sessions with you and go and see our past lives. We've talked a little. We haven't talked too much about our own experiences, but we had distinctly different ones. I mean, distinctly between what I experienced and what Beth experienced.
And I guess for that matter, what Peyton witnessed. So I'll be interested to hear from his point of view the differences in how we went about it and what we experienced.
Yes.
But before we get to that, Amelia,
let's talk a little about what it is. So what is past life regression therapy?
Great question. So I think in the simplest wording, but of course not simple in theory, is past life regression hypnotherapy is journeying back into the past, and not the past of our current life, but actually into the past or pasts of our many, many, many past lives. And the magic way of doing this is through hypnosis. And hypnosis is simply deep relaxation. But when we are going that deep into relaxation through hypnosis, what we're doing is we're dipping down into the depths of our unconscious and subconscious, where all of the memories lie, memories about our past lives. And it's also in those depths where we store trapped traumas and feelings and thoughts and ideas. And so we're doing a deep dive down into the depths of our soul to mine what I call that soul data. And then our past life memories can emerge. And I like to emphasize the word hypnotherapy. Now, I'm legally not a therapist. I can't call myself that, but I do believe in the therapeutic healing effects of past life regression hypnotherapy. It can be approached and sought after for just simply wanting to connect with a past life for entertainment's sake, curiosity's sake. But to me, that's just the tip of the iceberg. To me, the power of past life regression hypnotherapy is for that holistic alternative healing and the opportunities to transform personally. So, yeah.
Yes. That is very, very, very interesting. And how did you get into this line of work? How did this present itself to you?
It was unexpected, and like the rest of my life, yeah, just unexpected. And I feel like I was divinely led to studying this practice. And I did go into a master's program that was a year long to study this, but I was guided to do that because I have been feeling, I think through the course of the pandemic, I felt called intuitively to just deepen how I am showing up to be of service to the world and how I am showing up as a counselor, as someone to help guide people through their life. My soul's mission is to help people connect with their truth and authenticity. And that's what I do through my business, Creative Spirit. And for 18 to 20 years, I've been, you know, a professional spiritual intuitive channeling intuitive guidance for others, but I have felt particularly called over the pandemic to begin to put my clients in the seat of the healer and the intuitive. And so when I said yes to that calling, past life regression hypnotherapy appeared. And that's what I love the most about regression hypnotherapy, is that the client, and I said this to y'all, I believe, in preparation for y'all's sessions, is that you're the captain of that ship. You're steering the ship. I am simply holding sacred space, a safe container for you to go back into those memories and those experiences in a safe way. And then I'm playing detective and asking all sorts of questions so that I'm understanding where you are on that journey and helping you self-navigate the path. But essentially, everything that's coming up is coming from within you. And that, to me, is the most powerful transformational guidance that we can connect with. It's that coming from within ourselves.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful. I love it. I don't even have a follow-up. That was so well put. I'm stunned. I can't even think. I had a question. Now I forgot it. Beth, do you have a question?
So you said that you signed up for a master's program to go do this. Where was that, here locally in New England? Was it somewhere else? What was it like going through a program like that?
So the program is it's integrated imagery, regression hypnosis, which in short is regression hypnotherapy, including past life. It was with Atlantic University in Virginia Beach. I think I'm saying that correctly, in the middle of our country on the East Coast. And they offer all programs related to esoteric theory, healing, mindfulness, spiritual guidance, etc., including the hypnosis program. And fortunately, it was all online. Originally, it was a hybrid program with the bulk of it online and then the intensives down on the campus. But due to the pandemic, we could stay safe at home. And it actually worked beautifully. All of the regression sessions that I did with my fellow students and all of the sessions that I've been doing with my clients over the past year work beautifully online. It just, just depends on the quality of our technology and the equipment. And the program was really, it was just awesome. It really inspired me and kept me feeling passionate and kept me afloat during the past year or so. And excellent mentors. And it was an intense program. It's intense, right? We had to do so many hours, many hours of regression, and including regression for ourselves, et cetera. So not only are we learning technically the skills, but we're also therapeutizing ourselves, you know, so that we can be as self-aware as healing practitioners ourselves. So any program like this is always intensive because it's two trains running, the self-healing and the helping of others.
Nice. So who did you get to work on and to practice on while you were at home doing this? Was it always your classmates, or, you know, were friends lined up at your door being like, me next, or?
It was classmates and then, yes, friends. But, you know, I really tuned into my network to see who would be open to this. And that's not everybody. This is a healing modality. Again, all healing modalities, you got to tune in to see what's right for you. Fortunately, I was able to always find people who were ready for this type of work and people who are courageous enough to go into the unknown territory of past lives and dabble in hypnotherapy.
That's a great way to describe it, because yes, it was definitely not an easy thing to do, to like put yourself in that vulnerable position where I had no idea what was going to happen. And I was a little scared, but you made it very, very comfortable. You know, I was very reassured. But it definitely took some courage.
Yeah. And I really, I love that you're sharing that. That's a beautiful truth. And I totally understand that. And it's interesting because when I'm working with a client for the first time, you know, there is the intake interview, which mm-hmm. is a beautiful conversation in which the client gets to share what specifically they want to explore or work on. And it's also a time for us to build rapport, right? And rapport is everything in hypnotherapy, especially past life. And rapport is that positive, safe connection between therapist and client. And I really, really value and enjoy creating that safe space and energy because that's the name of the game. And then it's interesting. I'm very mindful of being careful about what I say the experience will be like because it's so unique to each individual. And as a hypnotherapist, we're working with suggestions and I want to avoid creating in the client an expectation mm-hmm. that they may not meet up with, which then consciously, cognitively could just affect their experience in a negative way. So I put the information on my website. There's an FAQ on my website that I feel gives a lot of good information about what it entails. And then other than that, it really is about surrendering, right? It's about surrendering to the experience as the client, trusting mm-hmm. yourself, hopefully trusting me, and then allowing whatever wishes to emerge. And I said this to you both, trusting whatever wishes to emerge from the depths of your subconscious and allowing that to be. Everything that you're seeing, thinking, feeling, hearing, tasting, smelling with all of your inner senses, whether it's like a movie in your inner mind or if you're just feeling it kinesthetically, it's trusting and not allowing that inner analyzer to come online the entire time to try to pick it apart, mm-hmm. right? To let go.
Just experiencing in the moment.
Exactly. Yep. Experience it, feel it, see it, say it, mm-hmm. cry it out, whatever comes up, right?
I was crying the entire time. The entire time. I was going to say that as you were saying all that, I was like, or like just sob, like borderline uncontrollably, like even in the intake. I was, oh my God, I was like, just like, I don't know, but I just got like so overwhelmed with everything. And plus, like, this is something I've always wanted to do. Like Beth can attest to this. I've been bringing up doing past lives since season one. I'm like, mm-hmm. let me do a bonus episode on like past life stuff. I'm like, we did, and I mentioned this to you while you were there. We did one episode on near death experiences and similar kind of in the same ballpark, I'd say. And, I was so overwhelmed. I'd always wanted to do it. One of my best friends, she had it done. She's always talked to me about it. She actually wrote into the show. I asked her to tell us more about her experience. And, it was so moving. It provided me with a sense of closure in certain parts of my life where I needed that closure. And it was just like a good cry. You know, you ever just need a good cry? I do once a week and that was it. So it's, you know, it was a beautiful movie experience. It's something I can say I will be holding on to the rest of my life. I would be interested in having it done again. And that's actually one thing I wanted to talk about too, which is how many lives do people have? How many do they see? How often can they have this done?
Great, great questions. If I can, Amelia, I just want to loop back to what you were so beautifully expressing about your release of tears throughout your experience.
Sure.
It makes me so just peacefully joyful when the client is releasing in that way during the session, because to me, again, that's the point, to connect, to reconnect with those past feelings and then to release them now, because through the release of the tears or the yelling or whatever is going to emerge in the session, that's a release. And release is healing, right? The release of trapped feelings, sadness, anger, etc., that we felt centuries and centuries ago that are still stuck in the DNA of our being that wants to be released. And that's in release. That's one of the main goals of my job, is to help the client release that and then reframe any negative thinking so that they awaken in their current life feeling lighter and clearer. So I just wanted to come back to that point. How many lives do we have? That is a great question. I would like to just say many, 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 many. I don't want to put an exact number to that, hundreds, thousands. I guess I just put some numbers to that. But
well, so while you're on that topic, you know, there's this idea of you run into people who are an old soul, right? And then you run into people who are a very new soul, right? So I think that there can be a range, that there are some people who have been around already a lot of times. And then you occasionally run into one of these just fresh people. And I don't mean fresh like they're being a wise guy, like they're just so new. And I feel like people who are so new, they have a lot of joy. Whereas people who have been around a lot of times tend to be a little bit more like, I don't want to say curmudgeon-y, right? That's not the term that I'm looking for, but they're a lot more sedate, right?
Yeah. And Beth, I fully agree. I do. And what you're referencing is actually reincarnation theory, right? Which we have to talk about and unpack because we're talking about past life regression. So just some like thoughts on that. So I personally believe in reincarnation theory, and reincarnation theory transcends religion. Mm-hmm. It's more of a spiritual thing to me, which I love. It helps me understand who I am, what I'm doing, and it helps give me peace, right? Because I've got another chance, right? In this school of life. And I do believe, Beth, as you just so defined, that there are old souls and then younger souls, because we keep reincarnating. And as we do, we become wiser and wiser and wiser. And ultimately, the goal is for us to ascend into that place of the highest love. That's kind of like senior year. That's the graduation goal, mm-hmm. right? In this school of life, in which karma is the curriculum. So going back to reincarnation theory, the really awesome thing about past life regression work is you do not have to believe in it or subscribe to reincarnation for the work to be effective. I'd like to say, if you can simply get on board with a more, I guess, neurological scientific theory that our subconscious, lower levels of consciousness, hold trapped data that gets released during hypnosis, that's the name of the game for those clients. And you have the option then to emerge and look at the journey you just experienced or the story, and perhaps see it as a highly charged, symbolic, almost like personal myth that mirrors your current life. And you've got the opportunity to do some analysis to see, where's the wisdom within that metaphoric story? What are the lessons that I can take away from this to improve my current life? And, or there's the root of karma. We can believe in the laws of karma, that everything we do in one life, it's got to be balanced in the next one. And that's where the karmic law of oneness comes in. Everything must be balanced. So anything that, quote unquote, bad that we did, it's got to be balanced later on with something that balances out that energy. And karma is not punitive. It's educative. We use that phrase, oh, karma's a bitch, you know, or something like that, which can imply that karma is really out to get us and screw us. But actually, it's our insurance. It's the insurance that we're actually going to be safe to move on. But karma essentially does define the lessons that we're going to re-experience from life to life. And that's what we can explore in past life regression. We can go back to the root of our karmic issues and dig them up and release it and reframe it and come out of it having released those karmic ties.
Awesome.
That's a fun thing to think about.
It's a lot to think about. Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but I always think of karma being sort of like a short term, like I do something today and karma is going to get me within the next week. Right. Whether it's good or bad, whatever it's going to be. But the idea that our karma would follow us life after life.
See,
and that's big.
That's more how I have always thought of it. Cause I remember, especially during like trying times in my life, and I expressed some of this to you, Peyton, during our interview, in certain times of my life, I just kept thinking like, what did I do in a past life to deserve this? Like what I know I didn't do anything lately. This is too much, but like, what have I done on some like greater level, right? Mm-hmm. And then by the same time, like I think about a lot, you know, I don't want to get too personal on the show, but like I think about a lot in terms of my own family, right? Like my, you know, my mother's very sick. She has early onset Alzheimer's. My father's been her caretaker for 9 years. He is a fundamentally different person now than he was 9 years ago. And I think everyone who has ever met my father would agree, a better person. Not to say 9 years ago he wasn't a good person, but I always say to people that God gave him this challenge and he rose to accept it. And that's kind of how I've always talked about it. It's the rising up. And how I feel like I've even talked about this with my grandmother, that this is some kind of like karmic or godly test. So, you know, when you're Christian, my grandmother's Catholic, Beth and I are Baptist, you know, it's like God always giving us these tests, but could like another way of like these quote unquote tests almost be thought of as figuring out your karma or dealing with this karma. So that's something I often think about, especially in that situation. And it's so fascinating to think about, right? And then you have to wonder too, like, is your karma in this life, is it from your immediate past life? Is it from 5 past lives ago? Is it, I don't know. Do you know? I don't know.
I love it. You just said so many awesome things that I want to piggyback off of. First of all, and this goes back to something, Beth, you were saying about where we fall in our soul's history. Are we an old soul, young soul? Mm-hmm. One really cool form of regression hypnotherapy that I do is life between life regression, which was has really been made popular by Michael Newton, who published all of his theories and cases. And we studied Michael Newton's work in my schooling. But essentially in life between life regression, we are going into the life between life in which we are a soul and we are connecting with our spirit guides, our higher self, and we are reconnecting with the memories of when our soul between lives made plans for the next life in relation to the past life. And so, and in the life between life regression, we can actually discover the age of our soul by examining the color. So Michael Newton discovered that we have auric color around our souls in the life between life. And depending on that color, that is where we fall maturity wise as a soul. So that's a cool thing you can get in that regression. And then going back.
Now I want to do that. Now I want to know.
Yeah, it's an intense experience. It's 3 hours long as opposed to the 2 hour past life.
Wow.
And life between life, it's a prescribed script to get into the life between life. So I'm guiding the clients into positive childhood memories and then back into the womb of their mother and then into a past life and then to the death of that life. And then we beam up to the life between life. So it's rich. There's a lot.
Well,
Amelia, I like you tend to believe that karma applies to lives as opposed to a day or a week. It's about what we inherit energetically from life to life. And I do believe that the karma we are trying to work through or burn through in our current life, it definitely can come from our most immediate past life and from many, many lives ago. In fact, there's something we can do in regression or that I could do while the client is under hypnosis is once a client hits a challenging experience or memory that's really emotional, intense, and upsetting, I can ask that client, does that feeling feel new or familiar? And if they say it's familiar, then that's a tip to me that a similar situation occurred in an earlier past life. And then I can take them back even further because essentially we want to get to that root cause to do the unrooting.
Whoa. Cool. Very cool. You touched upon this a little. It's just one thing that I've kind of been thinking about, but how do you, and if you don't, I don't know if you do have an answer to this. I probably should have asked you this before the show. I don't know. It just came to me. And if you don't, it's fine. Like, we don't really have an answer for, like, how do you know?
Amelia loves to qualify before she asks a question.
But what do you say to people when they say what you do is just tapping into the subconscious? It is just these trapped emotions we have. Like, there's no such thing as past lives. And how would you do that? And it's just some kind of just like a meditation, if you will. Like, it's just a guided meditation of, and just seeing what you see inside your head. What would you say to that?
I love that phrase, a guided meditation. And I'm going to borrow that, because that phrase actually might feel really good and yummy to a client. I like that. And I've thought of that similarly, because again, we're just relaxing and then we're going into our inner world. If a client comes to me and says, Peyton, I don't believe in past lives, and this is simply an opportunity to tap into unconscious, subconscious stuff, then I say, yes, yes, it is. And if you're willing to go there, let's do it.
I'd be very interested to see the client who goes to the past life regression therapist who doesn't believe in past lives.
He might have someone, because my husband is very interested. He's like, cool, I want to do that. I'm like, you believe in past lives? He's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm like, as soon as I came home, he's like, oh, I want to go. So yeah. I don't know, you might get one.
Well, the I don't know means he's at least open to it.
He is open to it.
Yeah.
He deals with me all day. So he's open to a lot now.
Yes. Curiosity can take us far.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So yeah, let's get into our past lives and kind of what happened and what we felt. Beth, do you want to start? Ours were so different. They were so different.
Why don't you go first? Because chronologically, you went first. You went and had this done while I was still on vacation.
Okay, sure. I'll go first. I went. Beth was on vacay. Viva la Mexicana. And I went, I did mine all in person in one go. We should say this. I want to say this off the bat and then again at the end. Peyton, he does these in person or over Zoom. So if you're listening anywhere in the country, in the world, you can have this done via Zoom. I chose to go in person because we live about an hour and a half away. And I'd never been to Marblehead, so it was very beautiful. So I was already like feeling cool, even though I got stuck in traffic. But we sat down and we talked, and I cried a lot, more than I thought I would, even though I am a crier. They say that you become your mom at 32, and I just turned 32, and my mom's a wicked crier. So now I'm like, oh, it's happened. So we sat down and just talked it all out. And then we went into the room. I laid down and like, I started asking like my little nervous questions. Like you gave me so much time to ask questions while we were doing the intake. And I was just like, so overwhelmed by myself. I couldn't think of any. And then it's like, I'm about to go in. I'm like, oh, by the way, here's 20 questions. Can you answer them real fast? But then finally I was able to relax a little bit. And you start out in kind of like a meditative way, right? It's pretty similar to one that I did in like mediumship classes and different things like that. And you go in and you gave me the choice of, could I go over the bridge or through a door? I chose bridge. And that's important because later Beth chose door. So as I went over the bridge, went on and I enter into my past life, and the way I saw it, it was like very difficult to see it. It was like everything came in really fuzzy at first. And it was almost like wearing bifocals, but like only one part of the glass was your prescription, if that makes sense. It was like things were kind of like going in and out for me a little. And there was a lot of like chatter around me, and you were asking me questions. And I remember before I went in, you saying it was like watching two monitors at the same time, or like two TVs, like you're here and you're there simultaneously. So I'm there and I'm looking through my eyes and I'm seeing everything, and I'm very short and I'm very skinny. And I'm like, wow, this is great. But also I'm like, where am I? Right? Like, where am I? And like, I just hear, it's like background noise, and people are, my husband, who's not Paul, but the husband in this life, is talking to me, and I'm kind of looking and like, I can't tell what he's saying. And I'm just trying to like focus on it. And I'm holding a baby, which is wonderful. And it seems to be some kind of like christening gown or something, like in my little baby, and just walking around. And it takes a minute to get there. And lo and behold, after a couple of minutes, I'm going on and on, I'm sorry, but I realize I'm in England. It's probably around like the 1500s. There seems to be like a castle or something in the distance. And when I saw the castle, for some reason, in my head, it was like, oh, it's like Scotland or Ireland. But then when I heard people talking, I kind of realized it was England and everything was really dirty and really muddy everywhere. And like, I could just tell, like, I was really poor and like, we were all poor. It was like everyone around, like, it was just a poor village. But we were like happy, right? And I was like in my body trying to figure out like what is going on. And I was probably like 16. Like I was very, very young, but I was married and I had this new baby and it was my first baby. And just like walking around, and it felt like it had to be coming from a christening or something. And I was just so proud. And like my husband, I just remember he was so tall and I was just like happy. And it was just like this joyous feeling. It like felt like I felt the joy inside of myself, despite like the also simultaneous, like, where am I? What am I doing? Like, it was almost like that movie Being John Malkovich, which I know I've brought on the show before. I don't watch a lot of movies. And of course I watch one movie and I bring it up like 20 times, but you know, when you go through the hole and you're first looking through John Malkovich's eyes and it's like kind of out there and you're not really there and you don't really know what's happening, but other stuff's happening to you. I don't know. It felt like that. So I got the sense of that. And then you had me go forward a little and I realized I was like in my home, which was like a one room, like mud kind of shack with wood, you know, and I had like a little cauldron on my fire and there were two pots in my kitchen. I was like so proud that I had two for some reason, or like, it was like a pot or a pan. I was just like, that was like my joy. I was like, I had like, look at me, look what I have. And Paul, when I was telling him, he was cracking up with that. He was like, of course you would, like, your kitchen is what you would love. But it was just one room and there were like children around. And I realized at this time, like, it was my kind of position in our village to watch the children. And all these kids would come over when other people would go out and work the fields or I don't know, whatever they did. And I had, I forget how many it was, like seven or so. I just remember like I had, and I know I said it to you while we were going out. I don't really remember now, but I had all sisters. And I think it was like seven sisters I had, and they all had kids. And as I'm like looking around at my sisters at one point, I realize one of them is one of Beth and Mai's aunts in this lifetime, which was very interesting to me. That was the second person who I had met in this lifetime from that lifetime. But then like a lot of other people I had never met, or I guess I haven't met yet. So that was very cool. And that was that lifetime and it was great. And then you're like, okay, go forward a little more. And as I went forward a little more, all of a sudden I realized, and it like took me a second too. I'm like looking around and I'm like, why would there be this wallpaper here? And I'm looking around, I'm like, why would the lights look like there's still candles, but like, why would they look like that? And then I realized like, I'm in another life. Like I'm not there anymore. I'm somewhere totally different. And now like, you know, I'm more like middle class. We're in like probably like the late 1800s. And I realized like I'm at this funeral for one of my family members. I don't want to go too much into it. No one I know in this lifetime, but I just don't want to go too much into it. And, you know, just like that hurt and that heartache and of being there. And then in that lifetime, it was like, because of this horrific accident, like my husband no longer spoke to me and just kind of like abandoned our family, but we were Catholic, so we couldn't get divorced. So it was kind of like this like shadow of a person always around who wouldn't speak to us. And then like, I got this job as like, as like a secretary. And it was like very, like, I just felt like very overwhelmed. I'm in this like huge thing. And then you had me take, okay, so now go to like the moment right before death. And that's where you had me go. And that one, it was like so clear out of like everything we talked about that day, like that part was very clear. And I'm lying in bed and I'm just so old and like so little and so like skinny and old and like old, you know? You know when people are like old and then people are like old? I was old. And just looking around and like my whole family is just standing over me. Right. And it was just like that beautiful moment. And like, I was just felt like so at peace and just so proud of my life, just like unbelievably proud of what I had accomplished and proud of my family. And like, I had all these sons and like, it felt like we were in almost like the Great Depression, but like my children were so, or like around that time, maybe not the depression, but like maybe right before it, but like my children were very successful and happy and good people. And I remember saying that, like, while you were kind of talking through it, I'm like, I'm just so proud of them for being good people, but also just so successful and like happy. And like all my grandchildren were around, and Beth was one of my grandsons who like I noticed at the end of the bed. And
what did I look like?
Just like a little boy.
So how did you know it was me?
And you just get this like sense. It's like a sense. Like it was this one person I had known from way back a million years ago who I saw in some of them. There was our aunt, but she wasn't our aunt. What?
Which one?
It was Aunt Allison.
Okay.
Which her and I have a very interesting relationship now. And then you. But that was it. And like, I was kind of expecting to see like maybe my brother in this lifetime, my brother Wilton somewhere. And like, I didn't. And so I almost like want to do it again. Cause like my brother is my best friend in the whole world. Like him and I get together fabulously. And we have a very special, special connection. Even in this lifetime, when he was born, he couldn't really talk. And I was the only one who could understand him the first few years of his life. So just like even that experience, like walking around together, and we're just very close. And I just figured that he would show up somewhere if anyone would. So he must be somewhere else. And then, and I don't want to say this next part without crying, so I'm going to go through it really fast. Then you take me to the moment I die in that lifetime. And all of a sudden, everything is blue. And I feel like I'm in the sky. And all of a sudden, all these people from this lifetime, Amelia's lifetime, who have already passed, are waiting for me up there talking to me and like excited to see me. And it almost felt like what people would describe in like our old, that episode we did on past lives so long ago, where it's like all these people were there. And I just see everyone. And I especially noticed like my Uncle Peter, because he's so tall and he just passed away this year. And then our late cousin Kyria, who we've talked about on the show before, who was very much like a sister to me, but we were not speaking at the time. She very, very tragically passed away at 27 years old. And just like, I'm going to start crying. I'm going to wrap it up. She had some things to say to me that were very comforting, very nice things I needed to hear. And then I just woke up. Then I was just up. And Peyton was like, do you want me to count you out? And I was like, I mean, if you want, but I'm here. Like I was awake and it was just, and I just like hopped back up and I was like, here I am. And like, can I please have like 9 more tissues? Oh my God. It was so emotional. It was so emotional. Like throughout the whole thing, just like, oh my God. Embarrassing, but good, but very cleansing, very purging of the feelings. So it was good. It was, I really enjoyed it. So that was my experience.
Amelia's experience was cathartic.
It was. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And that can happen. You know, that definitely can happen. And Beth, Amelia, I would say you had your journey started off to be more traditional. You know, mm-hmm. You landed in a life and then I progressed you a couple of times. And then you did what I call you hopped. You're a hopper because you hopped from that one English life. Sounds like you hopped over the sea, the Atlantic Ocean, to maybe America. Although we didn't pinpoint that in the conversation.
Yeah,
I'm just making that up. And then, and what you've also pointed out is the beautiful experience that one can have on a journey, which is you realize your soul tribe and other people who are in your current life showing up in your past life. And like you said, you just sense the knowing. You know that that's your aunt or your whoever in your current life. And the reason why that happens is because the people in our lives are our greatest teachers. Everyone in our life is a mirror back to us, teaching us how to be a better human, how to be a better soul, what issues we need to work on, etc. And we travel in packs from life to life. So that is why we encounter our current life, loved ones and friends in a past life. Now, we're not necessarily always going to see everybody, because I do believe that sometimes we take a life off. It's like, I'm taking time off. I'll see you in the next one. For example, your brother, you didn't experience your brother in that particular lifetime.
It was crazy. It was great. I definitely was not expecting to have that experience with my cousin or even any of like my other loved ones up there. I mean, there were other people there. It mostly was just me talking to Kyria. And I got like freaked out by it. Like even while I was up there and I was still under the hypnosis, I remember like kind of stepping back from everyone and almost like flying back and like getting small. And like, I don't know, like this was not what I was expecting to happen. I especially like wasn't expecting, it was everyone again from this lifetime I'm currently in, like dressed how they would dress in this lifetime. And that to me was like very strange, but nice.
Just to explain that phenomenon, and of course I'll do my best because it's these layers that blow my mind. And of course we won't really know the mechanics and the truth of all this until we're dead ourselves. But having studied the theory and experienced it myself, there's always a part of everyone's soul that is up in the life between life, even when we are down in this life. And so essentially we are omnipresent. We can be, our souls transcend time and place, right? And so when we go up into that interlife where you were, we can encounter everyone because our souls, again, we are omnipresent. And I do believe that there's always that piece of our soul that's still up there, even though we're reincarnated down in the physical plane.
Beautiful. So now, Beth, how about you tell us about yours? Yours was very different from mine.
Very, very different. The word cathartic does not come into mind at all. Not even a little. So I had done my intake with Peyton on Wednesday, right? And so we went through the how does it all work? And if you can believe it, I made a bunch of jokes about you're not going to leave me clucking like a chicken, right? So then I went on Friday and
shocking.
I made...
Shocking.
The right? Jokes. Can you imagine? So then on Friday, I drove up to Marblehead. Now, unlike Amelia, who's never been to Marblehead, I have been to Marblehead lots of times because they have Marblehead Race Week where the sailboats all go out and have the best week of the whole summer. And it used to be a whole week, but now it's only like 3 days. And it's kind of sad. But anyway, so I drove up and I found the place with no problem. And I get there and, you know, all went well. I did not have 112 questions. I just kind of went in. I used the bathroom. I, you know, got in the little bed to me. And he's just got you on like a big massage table, right? And so he starts walking you through this guided meditation, as he calls it. And the closest that I can describe it for anybody is it's like Nidra yoga, right? Where you're just getting more and more relaxed. So Nidra yoga is divine sleep yoga. So it brings you into a state between waking and sleeping. And it's so relaxing and so de-stressful. So it's Nidra, N-I-D-R-A. It was very relaxing. And so we get to the point where I'm like pretty much completely under, and he already knew that I was going to go with the door instead of the bridge. But I had asked questions about that in our intake about like, well, what's the difference? How does it go? And he said, you know, with doors, you get to pick a door. So I'm like, well, clearly I am going to pick a door. Right. So
like
we get there,
show.
We get to the, yeah, of course. Right. I want to know what's behind door number three. So we get there and he's like, okay, which door do you want? And so I picked door number one. And Amelia's description of it took a while to come into focus is similar to what I had, but I didn't get that feeling of like I was out of focus. It's just everything was very dark. And it took a long time. It felt like me. It took like a long time for it to actually like come into any sort of focus at all. And the first thing that I saw was stars. And there were so many stars. And so then, you know, Peyton kind of lets me describe the stars a little bit. And he's like, so look down at your feet, you know, like, what do you see? And I was wearing sandals. And similar to Amelia, how happy she was that she was so skinny. My legs were also super skinny, but they were kind of dirty, right? And like my feet were dirty and my clothes were like, I was describing it to people at first that I was homeless. but I don't think that I was homeless. I think I was actually like a peasant, you know, in some sort of pre-industrial situation, because I could see the stars so brightly, right? And it felt like this was something that I did a lot, just look at the stars. And I think that historically, people prior to electricity spent a lot of time just looking at the stars at night, because there wasn't much else to do once the sun went down. So where Amelia was able to kind of like keep going forward with her lives and like skip to new places in the lives, I wasn't able to do that. So Peyton asked me to go forward. I went from being the peasant looking at the stars. And so he tried to move me, I think that you say it, Peyton, as the next significant moment in this life. And as I tried to move to that, like it just was completely different than anything. And all of a sudden, everything went green, right? It was black when I started, and then everything became green. And as it kind of came into focus, I was able to see that basically I was just looking at a hill. And I was just kind of like floating, sort of. It was really hard to describe. I don't feel like I was standing on the ground, but I don't feel like I was flying either. I was just sort of hovering. I don't know. But I saw this green hill and it had flowers on it. And that was cool. But I couldn't make any more progress after that. So, and this is kind of one of the things that, if you haven't picked this up about Amelia and I, Amelia is very comfortable moving forward with uncertainty, right? So she kept going through her lives. I retreated back to the hallway. I'll like try things a little bit and then I go back to safety, and then I'll try it a little bit more and then I go back to safety. I'm not quite as jump out of an airplane crazy as Amelia. So I went, so that was door number one. I skipped door number two and I went directly to door number three. And door number three, when I went through, and I haven't, Peyton, gone back and listened to the recording, because I really felt like I remember like exactly what was happening. So you'll have to correct me if I'm remembering wrong. But as soon as I went through door number three, like I didn't have that black moment where I couldn't tell what was happening. There was a disco ball, like, and it was spinning and it was bright. And I was all of a sudden like 100% in some sort of club, right? Where there was a stage and there were people dancing. And I can see the lights going around. Interestingly, I could not hear anything.
And you gasped.
I did gasp when I came in.
When you opened that door, it was the most involuntary gasp.
Yeah. And because it was bright, it was much different than the previous two, the previous door. And so then I'm sitting in there and I'm like looking around and I'm like, I don't feel very good, right? Like my stomach hurts. And I went over to this table in the club and I'm all by myself. And I just like, I felt so sick. All I could do was put my head down on the table and like, it felt nice and cool on my face. And like, that was it. Like that was the end. So I'm fairly certain that at some point I overdosed in a 70s disco club. That may have been the end of that. It might not have been, but so that's like regression life, Beth. But then like higher power spirit Beth had to come in and like take regression Beth back into the hallway. Like it was like a physical assist. Like I had to, as higher power spirit Beth, climb inside that body.
Whoa, cool.
Bring it back out into the, it was weird.
That's cool.
So then I went from three into four, and I did not like four. Four was very frightening. It was very dark again, like dark, dark, dark. And so similar to the first one, Peyton was like, okay, well, you know, when you can see a speck of light, you know, and it will show up, you know, where is it? And I feel like I stood there, Peyton, for probably 10 minutes before a speck of light finally appears. But instead of being out in front of me, where I can see it, it was actually like down below me. So it was almost as like I was standing, like I had gone through the door, but there was nothing there. And I was just standing on a little step and like way down below me, miles below me, this light spot popped up. And Peyton was like, okay, fly to the light. And I remember being like, I don't want to fall. Like it was very, and I'm not okay with the sensation of falling at all. And I was getting very, very upset. And so Peyton, he kind of, I don't remember exactly what you did to kind of like calm me back down, but I did get all the way down to that light, but I couldn't get into the light, which is what I was supposed to be doing. As I'm standing on top of it, I had bare feet, and I could feel it. It was like a glass ball under my feet, and it was cool and it was smooth, but I could not get into it. It was just like standing on this giant glass globe in the middle of a vacuum. It was very strange. But so then spirit me had to come, or higher power me, I guess, had to come down again and be like, nope, let's go back, and had to like take me back to the hallway. And so from there, this was so weird. I really wanted to go into door number two, but for some reason I had to go into door number five. And I think that if we had gone on a few minutes longer, I definitely would have gone back to door number two. But so I went into five, and I have to tell you, Peyton, I don't even remember what was in there now. Go ahead.
I do.
All right.
This was the one where it was very clear. And you were a young girl, I believe, or a young child in what you described to be an empty cafeteria.
Oh, yeah. I actually started to think about this afterwards. And I'm like, I wonder if I was like somehow caught up in like the Chernobyl explosion, like this just big empty lunchroom, like completely empty. There were lunch tables and stuff. And I'm walking around and I'm alone and there's nobody in the kitchen. And then I went out into the hallway, right? Like I assume I was in some sort of a school, but I get into the hallway and there's nobody in the hallway. And did the power go out? Was there no power?
I don't remember you commenting on that.
Okay. Yeah. It was very lonely. Right. And that was one of the things that I got as sort of like I went through all of them, is that I was alone in all of those different lives. I'm alone by myself, standing, looking at the stars. I was alone looking at that green hill. I was alone in the disco, and I couldn't even get into that light in number four. And then I'm alone in this big, empty, like school cafeteria and hallway. So to hear that Amelia had other people talk to her and that she was like able to recognize other people, like that to me is pretty impressive, because I didn't have any of that. Like when I was at the disco, there were other people, but it's almost like they were just part of the scenery, right? They weren't interacting with me at all. Then Peyton nicely like counted me back up. I didn't wake up like snap like Amelia did, but that's my story.
And before we did that, Beth, if you remember, after you played Lady and the Tiger and did all your door work, after the game show Price is Right door work, I invited you back to your safe place, which mm-hmm. is when you were still under hypnosis. And mm-hmm. there at that place of rest and peace, we did some processing about possible meaning to what you had experienced. And humorously, that stage, Amelia, you chose beautifully to bypass, because after you experienced your cousin, you woke up. And I was like, well, I'm going to throw my script out because we're not going to do any processing. But again, you know, it was perfect. You know, what you needed, what both of you needed and did, that was the way to go. And I followed.
Yeah, it was a really amazing experience. And Peyton recorded our sessions, and he emailed me mine, as well as a kind of list of just sort of points to think about as you process through. And so I figure I'll wait a while before I go back and listen to that, give myself a bit more distance from it. Hmm. Amelia, did you listen to yours already?
I haven't, no. I think I will at some point.
Yeah, at some point but it's almost 2 hours long. And so
yeah,
I'll have to wait till I'm driving somewhere far away.
I'm like almost scared of it in a weird way.
Both of you just relayed your experiences so clearly. And I want to point that out, because a lot of my clients ask, will I remember everything? And I say, absolutely. So it makes sense that you don't rush back to that recording, because it sounds like it's still so fresh in your memory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's there.
And even though I couldn't come up with that last bit in the cafeteria there, like as soon as you mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, that was anxiety inducing. Like, why am I alone? Where are the people who are supposed to be taking care of me? Because yeah, I was a little kid, you know, maybe like 8 years old. No, it was fun. No, I mean the whole not being in that weird cafeteria. I mean like the whole experience, right?
It was. Yeah, it definitely was. So yeah, thank you for giving us those experiences. Would you like to listen in before we let you go on the two stories we got in about other people's past lives experience?
Sure.
So the first one comes from Lauren, who has been on the show multiple times, and people know she is my best friend. And she starts off by saying, it won't let me send the attachment. So I don't know what that means, but... In 2009, I went to a hypnotist for anxiety who suggested that I undertake past life regression therapy. While disbelieving at first, the results of that session have stayed with me vividly these past 12 years. I was a tall, pixie-like woman with blonde hair cut short, wearing a white robe you'd get at a very nice hotel. Very Eddie Sedgwick. While smoking a cigarette, I tossed the clothes and belongings out a second-story window. My hypnotist asked me why I was doing that, and I responded readily, because I'm angry, I'm furious, I'm mad. Outside, there was a light mist of rain. Fog was still covering most of my surroundings, but I could see the impression of the old brick stone building and posts. Colors, besides the green shrubs and landscaping, were muted. A second scene played out after a brief fade to black. I was downstairs in a museum staring at a portrait of myself on the wall. A close-up of my face looking over my shoulder in black and white. Above, the noise of a party reached my ears. I was wearing a white dress and feather trim along the strapless neckline and hem. Holding a glass of champagne and yet another cigarette, I was crying silent tears. Unprovoked, I told the hypnotist I was a very sad, lonely woman. These two scenes have stayed with me a great deal over the years. When I'm in old cobblestone towns, I look up to the second floor apartments just in case I catch another glimpse of the old me. While my past self wasn't a happy person, I still wonder about her from time to time and the life she lived. Why did she have a blown up portrait on a museum wall? Where'd she get that dress? And whose stuff was that flying out of the window? Lauren.
Beautiful.
So she had another very interesting kind of thing. And she talks about it. She does. She talks about it all the time. That she has stayed with her these 12 years. And it really has, because she's, since the day I met her, she's told me about it.
That's amazing. What stands out to me too, Amelia, is how Lauren experienced her past life and how you two experienced your past lives. Both of you, and it sounds like Lauren, as you were in that past life, you were really, quote unquote, seeing everything as if they were photographs or almost like a movie. At least that's how it seemed to me through the way you were describing things. And I want to point out that some people don't see things like that. They're not visual. Their perception of their inner world is not visual. It might be more feeling, right? And so I want to point out that if you aren't a quote unquote visual person, when you close your eyes and if you don't quote unquote see images or stuff like that, you can still experience a very successful past life through feeling or even just hearing. I've regressed clients that they're not visual, but they're kinesthetic, they feel. And so I change my words. Instead of saying, imagine seeing the bridge, I'll say, sense a bridge in your presence or feel the bridge in your presence. And that just helps them get on board.
Whoa, cool. That's interesting. Before we started recording, I was in Medium Jamie Day's Claire's class. We were learning all about the different types of clairvoyancy. So that just took me right back there. Like, you can taste stuff, you can hear stuff, you can feel stuff, you can see stuff, but all the different senses and how it all up there in the non-physical comes back at you.
Yes, perfect comparison.
So this next one, I was very happy to get. It's a little long, but hi, Amelia and Beth. I saw your message about past life regression therapy. I've had this kind of therapy and it has given me some interesting insights. My name is Mar and I am from the Netherlands. When I was a teen, I used to have dreams in which I was someone else from the past. Different people all the time, but the dreams were very intense and I still remember them. Because I suspected they were past lives, I decided to have regression therapy to find out. Turns out I was mostly right. I also learned the things I am unusually good at in this life I actually learned in previous lives. I'm a translator, English to Dutch. I've always had an easy time learning English. So after a master's degree in English language and culture, I made it my profession. In my life before this one, I was a young typist in London. She unfortunately died during a bombing, but her life had been happy up to that point. Another one of my skills is playing the cello. My cello teacher always marveled at how I knew how to hold my hands without having her tell me. Also, my specific skills for and affinity with Baroque music was considered unusual. It turns out I was a wealthy Italian in the 17th century whose passion was music, specifically playing the cello. He had a beautiful, fulfilling, and long life filled with love, prosperity, and music. When I feel down, I think of the memories I gained from him, and it makes me feel good. Two lives that ended rather brutally were lived in France. I've always felt like France was not a country I really ever wanted to go to. But those lives also had an effect on my current life. In one of them, I was a nun and quite happy. Some years ago, I found myself in an induction weekend at a convent feeling super content, even though I'm not religious. I received several phone calls afterwards from the nuns wondering when I would join them. I found that when I'm unhappy or discontent, I look for things that made me happy in previous lives. I've done them before I knew what they were. I no longer play the cello. It feels a bit like it isn't part of my current life, but it helped me through a very difficult time. I am happy now, so the cello isn't needed. I still crave a sisterhood of women around me, but seeing as I'm not a mother now and decidedly not Catholic enough, it will not be a convent. Something I wondered about and also asked my therapist is why my lives were so very Western European. The ones we worked on anyway. She said this happens often. Her previous lives mostly took place in Scandinavia, and one of her friends had most of her lives in Southeast Asia. Anyway, this is my story. I'm really curious to hear about your experiences. If you'd like to know more, just let me know. I hope this made sense. Sincerely, Mar. Well, thank you so much, Mar.
Amazing. Thanks, Mar.
Amazing.
That was a lot of details.
Yeah, I know. We can definitely tell you're a translator because that was perfect. But
also, I was completely unaware that they did. She say English language and culture or American? I think she said English language and culture. She got a master's in that. Yeah. What an amazing thing to get a master's in.
You can get master's in. I looked into doing my master's degree, which I ended up not doing anywhere, but in the Netherlands because they have so many. Just amazing programs you can do, and they're way cheaper than they are here. So good for you, Mar. That was great. But what I liked about her stories is this idea of whenever she's down, whenever she's depressed, she holds on to these things from her past and just gravitates to them. Mm-hmm. And I found that very, very interesting. And Peyton, do you find a lot of people feel that way?
Sorry, clarify. People.
So like for her, it was... You know, she did cello in a past life and she finds out in this lifetime, whenever she's depressed, she wants to play cello. Or, you know, she was an English typist in a past life. Now she's a translator and she types in English all day. So do you find like these themes sort of repeat for people often?
Yes. Yes. Skills and vocation, ways of living, lifestyle, et cetera, definitely can be recurring themes from life to life.
Because I even think about Lauren's, and in hers, she talks a lot about like the details of the clothing. And she actually went to college for fashion design. So I'm like, and like the 1920s, that was such like an interesting fashion period. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Thank you, everyone who wrote in.
I was alone in all of mine. I was just alone. Just me. The whole time. Yeah. And, you know, apparently overdosing and. In a disco.
Well, and I guess that what I'm wondering, and I guess in mine, I missed this part of it, but are our guides, are our spirits, are our ancestors, you know, however you want to look at it, are they showing us what we need to see in this moment, right? You know, Beth, you saw some very specific things. Mar over in the Netherlands, she in her life, she saw were, she came to this realization that she was holding on to those things. And that's how she gets through her depression. For me, the things I saw were very based around like family, children, and like, I'm, you know, getting ready to kind of start this new part of my life. Maybe that's why, right? So like, you know, who decides what we see when we go back in time? Is it our conscious need to get there? Is it our angels, our spirits? What is it? What are your theories, Peyton?
Well, I would love to just first put that question back to you. What do you believe is the source of that?
I don't know. I believe everything happens for a reason. Everything's shown to us for a reason, right? I mean, that's part of all of it. I mean, it's this kind of like, I guess we could say karma, like this give and take, this ebb and flow. Like, what do we need to know right now? I believe the universe always gives it to us no matter what. Was it you? Where was I? Who was saying this to me? It might've been you. I don't remember who it was. Someone was saying to me not long ago that like, when you have something that's poisonous, the antidote grows nearby. So it's like, whatever you need in a moment, like the cure kind of presents itself. Was that you? Was that someone else? It wasn't you. It was someone. I don't know. I'm doing a lot of stuff lately. So I guess that's it. Like, maybe we just need to see these things at these times and meditate on it. I don't know.
Yes, I agree. I believe, first of all, with the intake interview, we're stirring the pot and we're magically setting that intention, right? And setting intention and what we talk about, what we lean into, that's creating a magnetic energy right before the regression. So I believe that that helps kind of cast the die, so to speak. And then this is transpersonal hypnotherapy, and transpersonal means, you know, beyond the human, right? And so I believe this work, past life regression, it's, we're going into the invisible realms and we are transcending planes, the physical plane, energetic plane, etc., to tap into this, to transcend time, right? And death, right? So it's spiritual, it's magical, it's soulful. And it's, so I do believe we do get into help and support from our spirit guides in the spiritual realm. And that's what I love about it. It just feels mysterious and magical and helpful all at the same time. And then I do believe, and it's what I do my best to say to my clients is, after the experience, spend time with what came up. What does it mean to you? What is the meaning? What's the wisdom? What's the symbolism? What's the metaphor? Right? What directly relates and what does that mean? What was metaphoric or symbolic? It's like, do the work, right? Do the work. A healing journey calls us to do the work. Work is not the best word because there's negative connotation there, but for lack of better words, work, do the work, right? And one thing I liked about Mars' account that you just read, Amelia, is it sounds like she's done multiple past life regressions. And that's really beneficial. One time is great. It can be profound, wacky, crazy, cool, instantly transformational. Sometimes it takes more, and we can go back into that life and do more unpacking, right? Because lives are complex. And sometimes one shot doesn't always bring the clarity that we need, right? So that is why some people choose this healing modality as their main way, because there's just more to do.
I love it. Beautiful. I love it. I loved the whole experience. I loved having you on tonight. I feel like I got so much out of it then. I'm getting so much out of it now. Beth, do you have any?
If you start crying,
I might. I might.
She is so close to crying. I can see it all.
Oh
over
my God.
Her face. I'm crying.
It is. There's.
I have just to leave if everybody's going to cry.
No. I'll be cool. I'll be cool about it. But no, it was lovely. Beth, do you have any last questions?
Yes. Okay. So I have two questions, actually, Peyton. So the first one is, it's kind of more specific to me. So when you have somebody who gets really agitated, right? Like, I was feeling very, very agitated that in door number four, I was going to fall. How do you kind of talk somebody back? So if somebody's nervous, you know, going into this regression thing that, you know, like something terrible might happen to them. How do you kind of talk them back off the ledge and get them back on track and in a positive spot?
So the client is in control, and I want the client always to feel safe and that they are leading the experience. And that said, I only know as much as the client is telling me, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I hear that a client is feeling distressed, unsafe within their past life experiences, which mm-hmm. I trust is the context of your question.
Yep.
Then it's about me asking questions to suss out what the client needs in that moment, right? I'm also monitoring the client's physical body language. You know, are they abreacting through tears? Are they shaking? Is their breathing unsteady, et cetera, right? Because mm-hmm. those are signs of an abreaction that I can then help soothe through suggestions, the reminder to breathe, the reminder that this is, these are only memories, that this is not the current reality. And I can also say things like, you can detach and view this like a movie. And you can re-experience this without feeling any discomfort or pain. So there are suggestions that I can make to help just kind of lighten the load for the client in that moment. But then again, it's interesting. The way that you shared that account, Beth, I just learned that it was actually more intense than what you were able to articulate in the moment. And so that's always really fascinating and helpful for me to hear after experiences, is that, you know, things can be very different, more intense, less intense than mm-hmm. than what is being told to me. So it's always just a game of faith and intuition. I'm really tapping in intuitively as well with clients, and trusting that. So it's a dance.
Okay. Now that I'm thinking about it a little bit, I found it very difficult to come up with the words in a lot of those situations to tell you what it was I was seeing. And I feel like I struggled with that a lot. Do other people, was my experience kind of typically what you would see? Did you notice that it was taking me a long time, or that I was like non-responsive, or?
So naturally, the non-responsiveness and the delay is so natural, because think about it, when we're so deeply relaxed into those lower levels of consciousness, our normal body function slows down, right?
Okay.
And so I expect a delay after I ask a question. And the delay is actually awesome, because it tells me that you're pretty deep. You're pretty deep into hypnosis. So I did my job in the induction. That's a good thing. Yeah. And then I have heard clients say that they felt so enthralled or overwhelmed by what they were experiencing that words just don't come. And that's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. You were able to articulate many things, and we were able to move forward. But how much a client says, it varies, and it's all perfect, and it's all good. You're having the experience, and that's what matters most, right?
Yeah. And I think that now, you know, being a week later, we did that a week ago, that having had a week to think about all the things that happened, I think I'm much more articulate about it now. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So my other question. All right. So without betraying any confidences or anything like that, can you tell us about what the most amazing session experience is that you've witnessed? Okay. And I don't mean like, has somebody fallen off the table, even though if somebody has, I totally want to know about it. But like, have you, like, somebody who's having like a really intense, like, what's happening there?
Yeah. I had a client who went into it was like the plague. It was the time of the plague. And my client in my client's past life was a healer during that time.
And wore the bird nose thing and everything?
My client never commented on that.
Oh.
That would have been interesting.
See, I wouldn't make a good regression hypnotist. I would ask too many pointed questions.
I love to ask the questions, but I also have to be mindful of time. because I could play detective like all day, right? Which is so awesome. Like, what were you eating? What were you, you know? Anyway, my client connected with intense feelings of overwhelm as a healer during the plague. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful moment of working with the client to step into my client's higher self, see the bigger picture, connect with what my client was capable of doing in that life. Mm-hmm. And the client was able to then release those feelings and also move forward in relaying the memories of that current life. And it was very vivid. And it was very emotional and it was beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for taking us on these journeys, for answering all of our many questions, and for, I feel enlightened. I told you this before we started the show, and I want to tell everyone, I want to be a hypnotist now. It's what I want to do. I feel like it's like my life thing. Like I want to just, maybe not past life stuff, maybe just helping people cope with trauma, even though I think that is kind of what you're doing. You do past lives, you know, I just think hypnotism is so cool. It's like, I don't know. I can't even describe my thoughts on it. It's awesome. I think it's just such a cool thing. It's so cool that you do it. And thank you. And when people want to reach out to you, how do they reach out to you, both in person, online? How do people do it?
Great. So they can go to my website, which is creativespiritma.com. And I have a holistic therapies webpage, which includes all the regression. And you can book online. And again, we can do these in person if you're local, or we can do them on Zoom.
That's right. So that's creativespiritma.com. And you got a lot of stuff on there. You do intuitive readings too, isn't that right?
I do.
Yeah. I'm going to get one of those from you sometime too. It's on my to-do list. So creativespiritma.com. You guys don't want to miss this. I would do it again. Beth, what do you think?
I would do it again.
It's great. I think other people should do it. I mean, you don't have to make a habit of it, but I think it's like one of those once in a lifetime things. It's worth doing. It's very interesting. And I am all for it. So thank you so much, Peyton. Again, creativespiritma.com. Creative Spirit MA on Instagram as well. And I'm going to assume on Facebook because those are usually all connected. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Can people email you can they email you directly?
Yes. And that also reminds me, I also have an option where people can book a free consultation just to talk with me for a half hour to learn more before they dive in. So but yes, people can email me at ppugmire@creativespiritma.com.
That is PPUGMIRE at creativespiritma.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. You guys rock. I loved being with you in the session and now this was fun. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Have such a good night.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye y'all.
Bye. Gosh, isn't he fun?
He was so fun and so personable and just I don't know about you, but he made me feel very comfortable and very safe.
Very comfortable.
And you know that I was a little worried about that.
You were very worried about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm happy you weren't. And you know, I kept thinking about that too while I was having my intake is like, Beth will be fine. Like there is nothing to worry about. It is. I was like, not hysterical, but I was very emotional, very fast, which I guess I could be anywhere I was, but he's so like, I know we found him through Jamie, but they both have this like very, I don't know how to describe it. How do you describe it, Beth?
Positive energy.
Positive energy, warmth, kind of
make you feel very comfortable.
Very, yes. That is it.
Welcoming.
Yes. Yes. And very young at heart. There's good people. Mm-hmm. They're just nice, good people.
Yep. Absolutely. So should we pay the bills here?
No, we have some other stuff to do.
We have other stuff to do first.
Yes, we do. We do have a drive-by ghosting. It's very emotional. I want to give it the respect it deserves. And then we have some reviews. Okay. So this drive-by ghosting is very emotional. I did ask the person who wrote it to us if I had permission to share it on the show. And she did give us permission, and she's hoping it will help other people if they're going through something similar. So I want to preface it with that. I'm going to try not to cry as I read it. We have gotten, I'm going to start crying because I'm already thinking about it. We have gotten this season and in between, and not everyone has wanted us to read it. But we've had a lot of people asking for our help finding mediums to talk to. A lot of people asking questions around loved ones who died very unexpectedly and very quickly. And I just want to say to everyone listening, if you want to write us an email and you don't want us to read it on the show, and you just want to ask questions or, you know, find resources, always we are more than happy to assist you in any way we can. Death is so, I don't know what the right word is, layered, transitional. I don't know. I don't know the right word. So I did want to say that. This one is from Pam. Premonition. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for your podcast. I've been enjoying it over the last several months. I had tried searching online for similar occurrences, but was unable to find anything similar to my experience. I hope to share it with you to get your thoughts and wisdom. I will preface it by saying that I do not believe myself to be a medium or intuitive in any way. My oldest son was to be married on July 28th, 2021, just a few weeks ago. We were all traveling as a family to Morocco to be there for the wedding. I have one son living in DC and another son living in LA, so we hadn't had a family vacation in a very long time. We were all excited about spending time together and having fun. About a week leading up to the trip, I began to get this heavy sense of foreboding that something really bad was about to happen. I'm typically a very happy and optimistic person and rarely have negative thoughts, but this was so intense. I finally decided to share it with my daughter. I didn't want to frighten her, but the feelings were overpowering and I wanted to have it documented with somebody. The feeling stayed with me constantly, each and every day. And in the middle of the night, on July 22nd, the police came to our door. My 23-year-old son in LA had died. We are a very close, tight-knit family, and it upheaved our lives and crushed our hearts. I wondered if it was the mother-child connection. Maybe it was nothing at all, but it was strange enough to me, and I felt there was something to it. Thank you for letting me share my story with you. Warmest regards, Pamela. And thank you so much, Pamela, for sharing that with us and for allowing us to read it and for wanting to share it for other people who go through similar things. And you are not alone. And that experience, as tragic and as heartbreaking as it is, premonitions do happen. Unfortunately, feelings happen. And whether that's your connection, whether it's your ancestors and your loved ones and your spirits, or just a combination of all the above. It is very real. And thank you, because I'm sure by you sharing that, you've helped someone else listening. So we do appreciate it and our unbelievable sympathy to you right now during this time and your whole family. Please know they are so much in our hearts and in our prayers and in our thoughts. So thank you, Pamela.
Amelia, do we have any reviews?
We have a whole bunch of reviews. So our first review is from the Apple iTunes store. It is a 5-star review. Great show, informative hosts. Love this podcast, from Leanne Marama. Thank you so much, Leanne.
Thanks, Leanne Marama.
Of Pentagram. We appreciate your support.
We love Pentagram.
Our next one is titled Ghost Hunting in New England by Rockville Red. Love every episode. 5 stars. Thank you so much, Rockville Red. That is a very encouraging message. Next one.
I wonder if Rockville Red is from Illinois.
Yeah, that's nice. The next one is from Monday.
Most of our listeners don't speak Russian.
I know, but I've said that line enough. They know it means I don't know. Okay. Next comes from Tijin VT. I am hooked.
Excellent. I love your podcast. That's what we're going for.
Yeah, hook 'em. I love your podcast. I too live in New England, Vermont, and appreciate the history as well as the ghost stories. Keep them coming. Well, we will, GT and VT. Okay, now on to Audible. let's hope that my Audible book does not start playing as I am. But I will let everyone know as I look this up, I am reading a fabulous book on Audible right now. It's called Talking Too Crazy by Mark Goulston, MD. And it is fabulous. It's how to deal with difficult people in your life.
I'm listening to Hobbit Stories.
This next review is from Audible and it comes from Christy in Wyandotte, Oklahoma. Wyandotte, Oklahoma? I don't know. But it is a 15-star. 5 stars overall. Woo-hoo! 5 stars performance. 5 stars story. Thank you so much, Christy. We appreciate you. Title is Love You Guys. Really enjoy listening to you guys after a long day taking care of the family. It's nice to just relax and listen to your great stories. I enjoy them because I just moved to New York. Well, thank you so much, Christy. We certainly do appreciate you. Wow, Oklahoma to New York. That is quite the trip.
Mm.
Do I have anything else tonight, Beth?
Just got to pay the bills.
Do you want to do our social media?
You can find us on social media. We are on the Facebook, Ghost Hunting in New England. We are on the Instagram, Ghost Hunting in New England. Amelia is on the Twitter, Ghost Hunting NE.
Follow us on Twitter.
She posts all sorts of random stuff on Twitter that if you're on the Instagram and Facebook pages, it's not the same stuff, which is very interesting to me. She has like two different personalities for those two. So very interesting. Visit our website, www.ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. I believe we have it for another year. Yes. Amelia takes care of doing all that stuff. You bought the website for another year, right?
Like months ago.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. We haven't updated it or anything, but it's still there.
You can send us an
email by all means. We would love to get your email. Send us a drive-by ghosting. Send us stuff about your premonitions. You know, you just need somebody to talk to in the middle of the night. Amelia never sleeps and she's on the email like you can't imagine. She'll respond.
It might take me a day or two to respond on the email. Don't put that kind of pressure on me. And actually, I kind of screwed up and I responded to someone, Daniel from Australia, and someone else on the Facebook like 3 weeks late. And I just feel awful about it. Didn't even realize the messages were there. So, you know, but I do have a sleep disorder, so I am up quite a bit.
Daniel in Australia.
To find me.
Daniel in Australia, we need to do a whole episode of drive-by ghostings again this season. And you haven't sent us any. Please send us some drive-by ghostings, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure that you leave us 5-star reviews wherever you can leave reviews.
5-star.
And be sure to visit some of our favorite guests. You can visit Medium Jamie Day. By all means, go see Tim Regan and Leanne up at Pentagram Salem. I'm going to say his name right. Aaron Shilb does our music. You know, he does a great job with that. And tonight's guest, Peyton Pugmire, you can reach him at creativespiritma.com or you can email him ppugmire, that's ppugmire at creativespiritma.com. Did I miss anything?
Nope. And as always, happy hunting.